Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, August 13th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, arson suspect arrested in citizen's arrest near Swain's Flat, Ouroboratopia Theater Festival coming to Arcata, Eureka, and Blue Lake August 15th through the 17th. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Just before 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, August 12th, emergency dispatchers received a report that the man suspected of starting two fires near Swain's Flat on Sunday afternoon had been seen walking westbound along Highway 36. For 2 days prior, CAL FIRE investigators and law enforcement officials had been actively searching for the suspect after witnesses reported seeing him ignite the fires. Longtime resident of the Swain's Flat, Bridgeville area, Jeremy Kurtz, said he got a call from an officer informing him that the suspect had been spotted near mile marker 18.6 on Highway 36. Having trained in close quarters combat for many years, Kurtz decided to try to locate the man. In an interview with Kim Kemp from Redheaded Black Belt, Kurtz describes the altercation.
So I pulled over next to the road work sign, and I had my wife in the truck. I told her to stay there, and I took off running into the woods. And there he was, and so I yelled out to him. I said, "Hey, we've been looking for you." And it scared him, and he dropped the bag that he had. But we got everything, you know, his belongings and stuff. I gave him a chance to pick up all his belongings and lock himself up there and explain, you know, the situation, and he didn't want to go that route. I had put myself in a position to where I was able to take him down without putting myself in harm's way. He still had his knife on him, and when I put him flat down on his face, I recognized where his knife positioning was, and it was at that moment I got my hand away from that, and that's when he launched like a missile into the sticker bushes where I was knocked, and just chased around him on one of the trails right there, and then got up to him on the road. I was by myself at first, and then when I first had an encounter with him, I pulled out my phone and I recorded the incident, and I told him, you know, to walk to the highway and give me that option. You can go and explain your case, and it was at that point he pulled a knife on me. So I just kind of put him face down, and he squirmed away and got into the bushes, and then as I chased him down the highway, a car came up that was somebody that spotted him and had turned around, and so they threw their car open and yelled at him, and he at that point knew that he was done, and so we took him down right there and held him until the police showed up.
With the help of a passing motorist, later identified as Brian Ayala, they detained the suspect, with Ayala providing a rope to secure the man until CAL FIRE and law enforcement arrived. Another local, Jonathan Grant, stopped to help ensure that the scene remained safe until officials took custody. KMUD News spoke with Jordan Kilbury, fire captain specialist for CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit, about the situation.
So there were some fires that occurred west of the Swain Flat Outpost store on Sunday. Upon investigation, there was a suspect that is identified that was in connection to these fires. And yesterday, this suspect was arrested and booked in the Humboldt County Jail.
As of now, the suspect's identity and potential charges have not yet been released by authorities. On August 15th through the 17th, in Blue Lake, Arcata, and Eureka, Mystical AV Club will be hosting Ouroboratopia, a new theater festival in Humboldt County funded by Measure J. The festival will feature over 40 local and international performing and visual artists performing at Del Arte, Synapsis, and Septemtrio Winery. KMUD News spoke with Alessandra Russo, one of the primary organizers of the festival, about what AV Club is and what people can expect.
So Mystical AV Club is me at our core. It's me, my partner Victoria, and our collaborator Mark. And we really started actually, before we began making the show Control Alt Delete the first time, before we had a clear concept, what we were doing is we were getting together, the three of us. Mark's primary domain is sound. Victoria is very much a hardware cable person, does like projection mapping, and we've made for several of our shows like a big installation of a pile of TVs, and so she like connects all the TVs and makes them all play things, and then I do sort of the software end of like making the videos and editing those, and so we started just sort of getting together and tinkering. We have a studio in Blue Lake as well, Gooseberry, and so we either play there or at our houses, and would just start tinkering and putting things together, and then stories started emerging through making these sort of collages of like videos and sound. And from there is where we sort of got the concept for Control Delete, which was the first show we officially produced as Mystic Lady Club. And our shows, we love tech. We love tech elements and multimedia. And so we're performers, but then also we integrate different forms of audiovisual effect as transitions or as sometimes the MC, and have, I guess, been making work together now for about 2 years.
What kickstarted the planning for Ouroboratopia was receiving funding from Measure J. After being voted in June of 2022, the measure authorizes an additional tax of 2% on hotels to put aside for funds for maintaining general county services. Services such as 911 emergency responses, children's mental health, rural emergency services, emergency communication systems, theater and public art, as well as much more. Russo explains the process of how planning for the event went.
Our original idea for the summer was to make a show about goblins and dinosaurs, which ended up not being the right project for us this summer. And we had just sort of been like, okay, what else do we do? Because we want to make work this summer. I wonder what opportunities are going to rise. And almost as we finished like speaking that thought, we got a text message from Leslie Castellano and Calder Johnson, we call them our club advisors. we've been working with both of them through making other shows locally, and they said, hey, we have got this opportunity. Do you want to come by and talk about it? And they pretty much just said, we have a section of this larger grant from Humboldt Creative Alliance that is dedicated to producing a new performance festival, and it's funded by Measure J, which means that I just glitched out.
Oh, it's all good.
Funded by Measure J, it's funded by Measure J, so that means the money is coming from the tourism department of the county. So the sort of underlying intention of this particular section of this grant is to ideally bring in tourism and to create, I believe the language is something to the effect of to create a regional tourist attraction that can, or to create, oh gosh, it's like to create an annual regional attraction with the potential, something like that. Anyway, basically attract people also from out of area to come and be able to experience the amazing artistic community here in Humboldt that, you know, not many people actually know about if they're living down in San Francisco or up in Portland.
Unlike many public events in Humboldt, Ouroboratopia has a suggested rating of 16 and up for attendees. Their event at Septentrio Winery, Jurassic, is explicitly 21 and up given the venue.
Totally, yeah. So a big part of the discussion when we were first offered this grant was that there are so many events that are catered towards youth, artistic events and opportunities that are catered towards youth in this area, and there aren't so many events that are catered towards adults. And so that is one of our main, actually, missions in creating this festival, is to create opportunities for adults to really play. And so most of our events are, and a lot of the performances and performers who have created pieces for this festival are exploring kind of a little bit messier themes and wanting to really give them the freedom to do that. And so most of our events are at least ages 16 and up. They're the recommended ages. We're also like aware that we're in Humboldt and a lot of parents like have a sort of different relationship with like rating culture than in other areas. And, you know, we're encouraging, you know, it's like a company, like recommended age is 16 and up unless accompanied by an adult. And that being up to the discretion of the parents. But I believe that I think all of our events are at least 16 and up. There are certain events that are 21 and up, like the Dinosaur Drag Show on Friday night, the 15th, that's at the Septentrio Barrel Room in Arcata. And so there will be alcohol there, so that's a 21 and up event. And then other events have, you know, like strong language and like sort of more graphic themes, like Janessa Johnsrud, who's a local performer here as well, is doing a multimedia theremin piece about bodily decomposition. And there's some projections and, you know, kind of grotesque descriptions of the different stages of a body decomposing. And it's sort of a romantic look at death. And so it's a lot of the themes that are being brought up are really intended more for an adult audience.
All events are free and open to the public with seating on a first-come, first-served basis. To find more information about the three-day event, you can visit mysticalavclub.com/Ouroboratopia. That's mysticalavclub.com/OUROBOROTOPIA. Turning to Mendocino. At approximately 6:43 p.m., Mendocino County's sheriff's deputies were dispatched to Portuguese Beach at Mendocino Headlands State Park following a report of a deceased individual found on the beach below a cliff. California State Parks law enforcement rangers and personnel from the Mendocino Volunteer Fire Department were first to respond and located the deceased, later identified as a 66-year-old woman from Las Vegas, Nevada. Preliminary findings indicate that the individual had traveled alone from out of the area and may have intentionally taken her own life. The injuries observed were consistent with a significant fall. At this time, no evidence of foul play has been identified. The official cause of death will be determined pending a forensic autopsy. The identity of the individual is being withheld pending positive identification and notification of next of kin. KEMA News reached out to Mendocino Sheriff's Office, who declined to comment due to the next of kin not yet being identified and the sensitive nature of the case. Anyone with information regarding this ongoing coroner's investigation is requested to contact Mendocino County Sheriff's Office at 707-463-4086. Information can also be provided anonymously by contacting the non-emergency tip line at 707-234-2100. If you or anyone you know is experiencing emotional distress or suicidal thoughts, help is available. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline provides confidential emotional support to people in suicidal crises or emotional distress 24 hours a day, 7 days a week across the United States. 988 is available via call or text and online chat through their website, 988california.org. In national news, Trump's Washington, D.C. takeover begins, sparking criticism of growing authoritarianism. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
President Donald Trump's Washington, D.C. takeover has begun with the arrival of National Guard troops at the nation's capital. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt gave an update at her daily press briefing Tuesday.
The president declared a crime emergency in the District of Columbia, federalized the D.C. Police Department, and mobilized the D.C. National Guard to end violent crime in our nation's capital. As part of the president's massive law enforcement surge, last night, approximately 850 officers and agents were surged across the city. They made a total of 23 arrests, including multiple other contacts.
In addition to arresting criminals, Leavitt says, we also want to make D.C. safe and beautiful. And she says that means removing homeless encampments.
So homeless individuals will be given the option to leave their encampment, to be taken to a homeless shelter, to be offered addiction or mental health services. And if they refuse, they will be susceptible to fines or to jail time.
Opponents of Trump's action point out that crime in D.C. is at a 30-year low, but the Trump administration is looking at taking similar action in other states like Chicago, Baltimore, and Los Angeles.
The president is speaking about what he'd like to see take place in other cities around the country. Right now, this administration is focused on making D.C. safe and beautiful again. When the time comes, we'll talk about that. But I will note that the president wants to see all of our nation's cities be safe. But I think starting with our nation's capital is a great place to begin, and it should serve as a model for the rest of the country.
The action in Washington and the possibility of similar actions elsewhere have sparked opposition. Some see racial overtones. The places where Trump has sent the National Guard so far, Los Angeles and District of Columbia, both have mayors who are African-American women. Trump repeated old comments Monday about some of the nation's largest cities, including Baltimore, Chicago, Los Angeles, Oakland, and his hometown of New York City, all currently run by black mayors. Advocates in Washington's black community say they'd been preparing for a potential federal crackdown since 2020, when Trump deployed troops during racial justice protests after the police killing of George Floyd. Jesse Rabinowitz is with the National Homelessness Law Center. He spoke at a rally in Washington, D.C. Monday.
Locking up people you don't like or don't want to see is textbook authoritarianism. Trump is testing opinion by focusing on groups that he believes to have little public sympathy, like folks who live outside. Right now, they are coming for homeless folks, trans folks, and migrants. But rest assured, soon they will come for everyone who is not a white, straight, cis, wealthy Christian man.
Democratic lawmakers have also blasted the D.C. takeover. House Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi said Trump is activating the D.C. National Guard in order to, in her words, distract from his incompetent handling of tariffs, health care, education, and immigration, to name just a few blunders. Democratic Representative Adam Smith of Washington State said Trump wants his own domestic police force. The split between the White House and Democrats is clear. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller said Tuesday, Democrats are trying to unravel civilization. President Trump will save it. On the other side, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz posted a message on social media saying, the road to authoritarianism is littered with people telling you you're overreacting. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
From California to Ukraine, officials tout clean energy for global security. Catherine Carley reports.
A group of veterans and elected officials says the ongoing war in Ukraine highlights the need for a global clean energy transition, including in California. Despite economic sanctions, Russia continues to earn hundreds of billions of dollars from oil and gas as it carries out military strikes on Ukrainian oil refineries. Blue Lake City Council member and Army veteran Catherine Napier says even her small community north of San Francisco is taking steps to reduce oil dependence and its harmful impacts.
Energy dependence on fossil fuels is not a problem that gets solved somewhere else by someone else. It starts in small places like Blue Lake.
She says her town is generating more solar power, building a battery energy storage system, and converting old sawmills into logistical sites for offshore wind power. President Donald Trump, who has criticized clean energy development, meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin this week. Experts say Ukraine has lost a significant amount of power-generating capacity. Some elected officials have called for a clean energy Marshall Plan to help the country rebuild its infrastructure with clean, renewable sources despite ongoing attacks. Svitlana Shushko with the Ukraine Ministry of Environmental Protection and Natural Resources says the war has changed her country's climate and energy policies from a matter of strategy to a means of survival.
It's not just a green project. It's our shield against the war. It's actually tools of our independence.
The country has already built 19 wind turbines just 60 miles from the front line. Shushko says solar panels on hospitals and schools are also helping Ukrainians navigate life during wartime, but that American and European support is still greatly needed as winter approaches. Communities worldwide continue to advocate for Ukraine, sending much-needed funds and humanitarian supplies. Jordan Mead, an advisor to the British Parliament, says the war is a battle for democratic values, including a prosperous and clean energy future.
For when local leaders act, when grassroots networks are established and mobilized, we create a chain of solidarity that no one, not even the tyrants, can extinguish.
For California News Service, I'm Catherine Carley. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's been more than 50 years since Alaska's Native corporations and villages received land from the federal government under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA. Some of those lands were contaminated when they were distributed, but the Environmental Protection Agency has only recently started paying for cleanup of a few state sites. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Alaska Native corporations and villages began to get funding for contamination cleanup under an EPA program launched in 2023. This year, the EPA has announced more cleanup sites. Alaska will get $6.7 million from the agency to clean up sites on land owned by three Alaska Native corporations and villages. The sites were already contaminated with asbestos, tar, and petroleum when they were transferred to Alaska Native corporations and villages under ANCSA in 1971. Stephanie Buss, who manages Alaska's contaminated sites program, says it's past time to clean them up.
We're just thankful for the work that we're able to do with the federal and tribal partners to get these sites addressed and really address the human health and environmental risks that they pose.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has called the failure of the federal government to clean up ANCSA lands a, quote, shocking environmental injustice. Murkowski created the EPA's Contaminated ANCSA Lands Assistance Program in 2023. Buss says the EPA grants target three sites. The money will go toward cleaning up asbestos near Utqiagvik, tar in Shishmaref, and sludge in Unalakleet. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium will also get $3 million in EPA funding to support the program and help communities apply for funding. Buss says the federal government and state are identifying more sites eligible for these EPA grants.
We are aware that there are hundreds of them that were conveyed contaminated that need to be addressed.
Past state estimates have identified over 1,000 contaminated sites. According to the EPA, contamination of ANCSA lands includes arsenic, asbestos, lead, mercury, pesticides, PCBs, and petroleum products. Alaska Native corporations and villages have said the contaminations are a threat to Alaska Native subsistence activities, posing serious threats to food security, human health, culture, and Alaska Native economies. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Public health officials remain concerned about a resurgence of measles cases in the U.S. They say it's hard for people in under-resourced areas, including tribal communities, to vaccinate their children. Partners in South Dakota are responding with outreach efforts. KFF Health News reports the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board, which serves tribes in Iowa, Nebraska, and the Dakotas, is trying to get ahead of measles outbreaks with mobile vaccination clinics. The board's Megan O'Connell says vaccination data on Native Americans is imperfect, but it suggests a lower percentage of them have received measles shots than the overall population.
Most of these communities are in very rural areas, so they can face significant barriers to care that others may not. Just getting to the doctor can be a challenge.
Her team is also working with tribes that want to host vaccine clinics. Elsewhere, tribal health organizations have launched social media campaigns and are reaching out to the parents of unvaccinated children. The CDC says the highly contagious disease has seen its largest outbreak in the U.S. since 1992, with a handful of deaths this year. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Network.
That's all. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Christopher Martinez, Catherine Carley, and Antonia Gonzalez. KEMA News is online, and you can find us on KEMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kema.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.